Hi, I'm Tyra G, your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners. Yes, you. Fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. Every week, we meet right here at this table for an hour to experience, inspire, educate, encourage, and empower each other through our joys and our lessons learned. We share topics that tradition tells us there are some things we just do not talk about. But here, we live beyond both the judgment and the wreckage. We share some aha moments and stories that have been left in our pockets for way too long. But every week, we start right where we are. Although many of your voices will speak light into darkness, there is no insignificant person around this table. However, you must come dressed in your inner awesome, believing that impossible is merely a word to describe the degree of difficulty. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, cablecast on Cox and Verizon Fios Channel 37, and Comcast Channel 27 in Reston. And we are webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Should you miss us? No worry. You can hear our archive, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G podcast on your favorite podcast platform or in my media room at tyragarlington.com. And if you just like connecting with me offline, that's easy too. Email me at Tyra@TyraGarlington.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our Frankly Speaking theme song and for naming it I'm Listening. This week, we return to another one of my favorite themes, This Is Us, which gives us another opportunity to meet phenomenal listeners who have been invited to share the Frankly Speaking table. They come from all walks of life with diverse interests, talent, and gifts. I view this particular theme like I do a box of assorted chocolates, all different and all good, and some you may never have tasted before. Today, we will explore the intersection between leadership and the recently highlighted concept of sustainability. You'll pay attention because sustainability is one of the newest subjects that attempts to build the bridge between social science, civil engineering, environmental science, with the technology of the future. Yes, we're going to be talking about the impact of the now on the future. Today, we have an opportunity to expand our views, be inspired, and get smarter. Now, as a matter of tradition, you know I like to create a common thought space for our time together. And today, I'll share the following encouraging words from author and life coach, Iyanna Vansant, in her book, Until Today. This is entitled, Devoted to Gaining Clarity. And I quote, "In life, certain people will impersonate understanding. They'll smile at you. They will assure you that everything is just fine. They will make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. They may even say, yes, I understand. Yet when the moment comes for demonstration of understanding, what you get is misinterpretation, misrepresentation, miscommunication, and you'll probably get blamed for the misunderstanding. Certain people will impersonate compassion and concern. They will have you convinced that they have your best interest at heart. However, when the moment comes for compassion and concern, what you will experience is abandonment, betrayal, rejection, insensitivity, and abuse or neglect. Do not be alarmed. Don't be shocked. Be aware that we all have different experiences and different definitions of the same experience. What we hear, do, and expect in life is always based on our own personal experiences. When we interact with others, we must understand and expect that we may not be on the same page or in the same book of experiences. Unless we take time to gain clarity in the beginning, we may find ourselves in the company of experienced imposters in the end. Until today, you may have assumed that just because they say so, others know what you know, feel what you feel, and will do what you do. Just for today, be devoted to putting forth the effort and energy required to gain clarity in the beginning of the relationship. Define your words. Identify your expectations. Clarify what you're saying and what is being said and what is being expected from you. I want you to declare, today I am devoted to gaining clarity. I know, I hear you. Tyra, that's all very interesting on a personal note, but connect the dots. Clarity, leadership, sustainability, what? I'm glad you asked. And by the end of the show today, you should be able to connect the dots. You may even start considering the need for sustainable leadership in your family or your organization. My guest today is going to provide some understandings how these concepts may intersect. I welcome Mr. Jay Little, Leadership Training Specialist, to the Frankly Speaking table. Good evening, Jay. The mic is yours to introduce yourself and add a new chapter to our Frankly Speaking Human Library.
Hi, Tyra, and thank you for having me on. My name is Jay Little, and it is a pleasure to be able to talk to your listeners. It's my prayer that the things I say will resonate with your listeners, and they will be touched in such a way they may think differently or even act differently in a way that inspires people around them, changes lives, and makes the world a better place. I'm very happy to be with you, Tyra.
I am so excited. And I like that goal, by the way, particularly the part about something may change in our listeners. Something we do in this period of time may put a drop in the ocean and make the world a better place. Help us know you. Help us to know your journey to the point where you could make that statement that you just made, that passion that you talk with. Talk
sure.
to us.
It's my pleasure. I started out in college as a political science major with a desire to work for the CIA. That's where my father worked for 35 years, and I wanted to follow in his footsteps. However, in my junior year of college, I went on a Christian retreat, and when I was walking up the mountain, I came upon a cross, and at that moment, and at that point, I wasn't I believed in a God, but I didn't. I wasn't a Christian. I just believed there was some creator. And all of a sudden, I became completely overwhelmed. God touched my heart. He showed me for the first time in my life who I really was, good and bad. And at the same time, while he knew me completely, he loved me unconditionally. And so, yeah, so it changed my entire life. I walked down that hill, so to speak, and no longer was I going to work for the CIA, but I decided to go to seminary. Completely 180 degree change in my life. I it was a like a road to Damascus type of experience. So I went to seminary, and then I was a pastor of a church, and I was a campus minister at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And then after a period of time, I got burnt out in the ministry. And I became a social worker for Fairfax County government. From that point on, I ran a couple of family resource centers, helped coordinate them, and was a social worker to families and adult and aging. And then my life took another turn where I started doing training for Fairfax County government, leadership training. And from there, I was hired to work for pharmaceutical companies and Fortune 500 companies as a corporate trainer. So I look at it and I see I have had three careers, one in the formal ministry, second one as a social worker, and the third one as a corporate trainer. And the theme is a life of service. Mm. So I stand back and I realize they were really all the same thing, at least with the same intent in my heart. And that's what I do today. I'm a corporate trainer for LabCorp. You may have heard of them. And they're located all around the world. And I teach leadership, communication, team building, things like that.
And what I find so interesting is the 180-degree shift. I sense the J that you just described would have been uncomfortable in the CIA.
That's absolutely correct today.
And the other thing,
change your mind.
That's right. And the one thing that I have an affinity with is when you said I burned out, because for a period of time I was on the clinical staff of the University of California, and my boss told me, he used to do co-therapy with me because I was the youngest member of the staff. He said, "You know what? You don't know how to maintain professional distance. You're so involved with the people you're trying to help that you're going to burn out." And I did, Jay. I did.
Of course.
And what I think is special is just because our gifts and talents don't fit in the first place that we're planted, we can morph. We have that ability, that flexibility to find a place where they work better for us and we can work better for others. And I like the statement, I now have a life of service. Now, you just used some words. You heard me make a promise in the introduction. I said, you know, we're talking about leadership. You do leadership training. That's easy. But the world is talking about sustainability, and that came creeping through our consciousness with, I guess, climate change was the leader, right? How are we going to sustain our planet? But where you are is a more personal space in terms of leadership, and we can walk into sustainability at a point. But talk about some of the critical success factors to being a successful leader in whatever you're doing.
Sure. I'm glad you asked that. Because whether it be people working toward helping reduce the climate problems or whatever we're working on, it's the same idea. Wherever we apply leadership thinking, it's the same idea, whether it be to environmental issues, whether it be to, let's say, human trafficking or any issues that are coming across our way that we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Our family, even in our own family or in organizations, it's really all the same. You apply the same way of thinking and really doing things the same way across the board, because it's, leadership is really human. It's human. We're all humans, and know what we're doing, it applies. So, yeah, I think some of the critical success factors in leadership is to really think of leadership as a responsibility. Mm. It's a choice. It's a choice. I mean, okay. Most people are not leaders unless we make a decision that everybody's leading somebody somewhere, a good path or a bad path. Then we could make the case everybody's leading or influencing somebody.
Okay.
But if we're talking, yeah, right. But if we're talking about something, you know, that's on the good path, leadership is a choice. I don't believe, Tyra, that many people really are leaders, and maybe that's okay. We do need followers too. But we have opportunities to lead, and quite often many of us don't take that opportunity. And so a critical success factor is first thinking about your role as a leader.
Okay.
I mean, a manager and a leader are not the same thing. A manager is important, but it manages budgets and timelines and resources. But a leader leads people. It inspires people. A leader motivates people. And they're not the same thing. You really can't manage people. We manage ourselves good, or we do a poor job. But leaders lead people, and there's a difference. So we have to think, what leadership is. So I think we start with this critical success factor of what is leadership.
Okay.
And John Maxwell will say, he's a famous leadership guru, maybe the most famous in the United States, but he says leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And I think that's true. We're influencing people by our behavior, what we say, and what we do. So I think it's a mindset right from the beginning as a critical success factor, who we are and what our own motivations are. So I think that we can go further and say that Stephen Covey, I like the way he looks at leadership and his mindset.
Mm-hmm.
He says that leadership is seeing a person's worth and potential so clearly that they see it in themselves. I love that.
I do, too.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Well, Stephen Covey's pretty great in putting this. But that gets back to what you were saying about inspiring. If you're able to see a person's worth to the extent that they see it in themselves, then that motivation should follow, right?
Absolutely. Along those, it should. And Michelangelo said, which was fantastic, he said, I saw the angel in the marble.
Yes.
You know that? And carved the stone until I set it free.
There you go. There you go. That's also one of my favorite art sculptors. Anyway.
I love it.
That was a sidebar. Okay. So
I love it.
I want to make sure, and I want us to really underline, I've heard you say so far, leadership is a choice and it's a responsibility. Everybody can't do it. And a leader is different than a manager. Hear you saying that. And then leaders influence. There's a leadership mindset that we have to have, and what we just talked about with Covey, seeing a person's worth. But so I can see those things in family leadership. So my question then becomes, I see motivation, inspiration in different organizations, family, corporate, whatever. Can leadership shift? That's what I want to get to. Can same organization, different situation, can leadership move around depending on the goal and objectives of an activity or a situation?
Well, yes, our leadership can shift to different organizations but it may play different roles based on what the needs of the organization. If you have a military-type organization, it might be a little more top-down.
Okay.
You may not ask people for their input as much as you would. Say if you're a police or firefighter or military, it's going to be a different type of leadership.
Okay.
Than it might be in an organization where you're asking for more input on how you actually do things. So it may take a different role, but you also mentioned the family. I can't think of any more important place for leadership to take place
mm-hmm.
than the family. If you, especially, if you have children, you are raising a person or people, and each person on average, maybe more now, but I have read, meets 80,000 people in this world. So if we are raising children in the family who are going to have an impact of some level on at least 80,000 people in the world, and maybe now it'll be more because we use Zoom meetings. Right? It may be millions. What more important place to lead than in our home? By example and by what we do and what we say. And I can tell you that all the leadership training I've had, and I've been teaching leadership for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
And I still have a lot to learn. I'm not saying I know it all, but I know a lot from doing it all those years. I try to take every bit of it I can and share it with my 13-year-old daughter, Gia, because I know that, well, of course, I love her so much. I want to do everything I can to help her have a good life. But I also know she's going to go into this world and impact other people's lives, and that's going to cascade, and we'll all go, be impacted by each other. Like you said, the overall idea of this is us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're all in this together.
Yes.
And leadership is an important part for the organization or the family.
And, I'm listening, and I'm thinking about Gia, which introduces another factor, how generations view. Like, we just took a horizontal slice when you said it could be by military or militaristic organizations, top-down leadership. And then maybe we go over into another silo, and we talk about leadership in the family. And now we also know about extended families, right? We know right. about generational influences. This tapestry could get very complicated, couldn't it? And then I'm thinking about generational leadership, because generations are defined by what the culture, what the generations experience during their, say, 20 years of becoming, what cultural events happened, you know. And I'm looking at the Gen Xers that are coming up, born with a phone in their mouth, you know, and how that's changed how boomers and millennials are relating. And it's leadership. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Tara, because it sparks something that I've been aware of, and is that with people tied to their telephones,
yeah.
as you know, the newest generations are, research is showing that the more we're tied to technology, uh-huh. the less empathy we have.
Ah.
The less empathy we have for each other. And this is powerful. And when it comes to leadership, research again has shown that the number one key to effective leadership is empathy. So it's going to be interesting to see how the future generations lead other people when empathy is the big key to leadership, the number one, and we're losing empathy through our technology. So it's going to be an interesting journey.
Well, what I'm hearing you say, though, remember I started out talking about clarity?
Yeah.
And assuming my audience will go, there she goes again. That doesn't make any sense. But when we talk about, I'm going to try and keep this clear. Empathy requires some level of intimacy, okay? That's difficult to create and sustain and maintain over a screen, intimacy. And I have seen people on dates sitting across from one another on their phones, texting one another. And that made my heart cry, actually. So, more technology, less empathy. So social media is impacting leadership styles. Can you go deeper on that? I mean...
Yeah, I would say a couple things. One, I would like to follow up on what you said about the couple sitting there at the table on the telephone, or at least one might be on the telephone, the other one's looking around like, why am I even here?
Yes.
Right? I saw a couple in New York City. This is a true story. I saw them walking down the street, each with a phone. They were holding hands. Each was talking on the telephone. I wondered to myself, are they talking to each other? Honey, how does your side of the street look? Oh, it's great over here, honey. All right? I mean, they just got to that level, right? I think what happens, you can imagine, if we ever, hopefully, prayerfully, get through this COVID and we're back in the same rooms together again, when that happens, then our challenge will be when a person is in a leadership role and another person comes into their desk or office, that the person turns away from the computer rather than keep on typing, or puts their phone down so they can give full time and attention to that person they're leading. If not, then there will not be that intimacy that you mentioned. And intimacy, a great way of thinking of intimacy here, emotional, psychological intimacy, is in to me see.
Yeah.
I love that. And so we can't have it if we're letting these wonderful devices that do help us talk to people around the world, we can't have that if it prevents us from talking to somebody face-to-face right next to us.
Now, Jay, close your eyes and imagine we're back in-person classes on a university campus. They walk into a lecture hall. I guess I'm sure they still have them. Or a small room. And the instructor or the professor walks in and asks them to put down their devices. I'm trying to think what that looks like right when that question is asked.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Now, of course, it could be partially generational, but I have been in classes where I've been teaching the class for corporations, and they did have their phones, and they did have to turn them off. And it was difficult for some people to do that. Some people resisted doing that because it's an addiction.
Yes.
The phone has become an addiction. And we can't really have the rapport and psychological intimacy if we have this addiction in our way. And it's a big problem. I think everybody knows that. I think it really can get in the way of leadership, person being the leader or trying to lead people or the people being open to being led.
There, I like that, Jay. Stop there. I like that because what you described, you experienced in the classroom. And I have actually had the experience of teaching a seminar called Managing Four Generations in the Workplace for the First Time in the United States. Mm-hmm. And what had to be considered, which was interesting to teach a class where those four generations were in the room, and to talk about communication styles, learning styles, leading styles, all meshed up together. And that's why I did the intro on clarity, because everyone in that room, including me, I was teaching from a boomer perspective. I was teaching, I guess it's normal, the way you learn, but I've tried to adapt that to be more inclusive in a teaching environment. But what became interesting was the importance that everyone in the room found a way to connect, found a way to be a part of. And that took a great deal of the semester. How do I keep this person, say a boomer that loves to get consensus and talk, to move through a process, and say a Gen X person that says, just tell me what to do, I'll get it done, I'll check with you, to a millennial that was like, I don't think so, I'm not going to work on this. After, I'm labeling, and that's unfair, but I'm just trying to give examples of different perspectives, same problem, same situation to solve. We're all in the room, we're all in the world, we're all in the company, we're all in the family, different generations. How do we respect one another? How do we sustain these vital organizations to our society? And the family is vital.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tara. I would say that what runs through all of those generations is that every one of us wants to be valued and appreciated and respected. This is human nature. It goes across every generation. And so if a person is to be an effective leader, they have to realize that people aren't things. They're not human doings. They're human beings. And they can cut through the different generations with the idea right from the beginning that every person wants to be valued and respected, regardless of generation, regardless of anything, really. Mm-hmm. This is all what we want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And really, that requires, I think, servant leadership. You know, the idea that the person in a leadership role is to serve others as opposed to just control and have power over others.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm popping back up. I'm keep popping up. I'm trying to connect the dots so people, you said at the end of the show, we're going to know what you were talking about. And I think it's bubbling up. I think it's bubbling up. In order for us to exist in a society where some people are being led and some people are following, there are certain characteristics that make that work. The person in the front or the back or the side, wherever you are as a leader, has to demonstrate that they appreciate the people that they are leading, that these people feel worthy in relationship to that leader.
Absolutely, Tara. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking now, if without that, I don't see how we sustain where we're going.
You're right. We can't sustain it without that. There's two things. People need to know where they're going.
Yeah.
And they need to care about going there.
Yeah.
I mean, in an organization, at least that's my experience in an organization, people need to be clear on what is the vision. Well, first of all, what's the mission? Why do we even exist as an organization? What's the mission, the purpose? Where is the vision? Where are we going to? What are the goals and strategies we're using to get there? People need to know those basic things, and they need to know how important their role is in getting there so that they know how important they are. And those are the very basics. That's at a very practical level. And then for them to want to go there, they need to be addressed at the personal level, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we talk about people need to know that they are valued and appreciated so that they can grow and develop, right? So I think they need both of those things to be an effective leader so we can have sustainability, whatever the issue we want to work on sustainability for. Any organization, whatever we're trying to do in any part of the world, in any situation, going back to even families, mm-hmm. have to know what are the basics, where are we going, why are we going there, and do you want to go there? You know, you have to have a way as a leader to tap into what's important to that individual so that they want to go there.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, I was just listening as you were talking, having been in a huge corporation for 23 years, mission, vision, goals, strategies must be clear. Audience, you hear that? I'm using clarity. Must be clear. But more importantly, I loved what you said, because what I learned as a consultant is every person in that organization needs to understand how they fit in making the mission, vision, goals, strategies come true and be successful. So that's like, I don't care if I'm answering a phone or I'm in a mail room. They still have mail rooms. Or I'm a delivery agent for the company. I have to understand my significance in that company or that organization reaching their goals. And sometimes that's missing sometimes, I think.
Oh my gosh. Tara, I'm giving you a guesstimate. I've probably trained, I don't know, 20,000 managers. It's just a guess. It's over, you know, 30 years in so many classes in the government and in the corporate world. I can tell you, my experience, hardly anybody knows what the vision, mission of the organization they work for is. Even if they walk by a poster of it every single day, mm-hmm. they can't even tell me what the mission statement is, even if it's one sentence. Now, they could tell me Star Trek's mission to boldly go in those days, which no man has done before, right?
Yeah.
They can tell me a fictitious TV show from the 1960s, but they can't tell me their own company's mission. So, because there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
Most people I run into don't care that deeply. So there's a lot of leadership is missing. And there's a challenge, really, to lead. I think my experience working in the government, the challenge is there's no organizational incentive for people to give their very best. Because my experience is no matter how good they are, something does not necessarily turn into a recognition or a promotion. And no matter how poor they are at something, that doesn't mean they will lose their job. So you have a sort of a lethargy. That's my experience working in the government. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, of course, but overall, I can see the difference. When I started working for corporate, I saw a huge difference in the energy level. I really did.
Right?
Because they had to survive. They had to give their very best. So the leadership challenge in the government, for me, would be that there's just not an organizational support to have people do their best. Actually, sometimes there's just the disincentives to do that. And at the same time, in the corporate level, a challenge is that while we tell people to be servant leaders and to bring out the best in other people, they see people at the corporate level who've gotten to the top being very ruthless.
Yes.
There's a challenge there, too. Mm-hmm. They wanted perfect systems.
And I can agree and validate. I'm thinking, when I moved into sales in IBM, it was always, you know, you could really bring in a huge contract, but the bottom line was, what have you done for me lately? And so your incentive was to sustain and maintain the lifestyle that you found there within the rewards. And that gets to the ability to motivate, I guess, subconsciously, ruthlessness. But the other thing was believing in the importance, believing in what the organization was doing. And I'm thinking when we went virtual, when we were everybody calls it lockdown, but when we closed our society for a while, there was all kinds of jumpiness around organizations that were not, the measurements that they had for their people were not the type that they could feel comfortable with if the people were not on site. They, you know, how do I know she's doing her job? And in the corporate world, it was like, did you achieve this? If you achieved this and it was your requirement, or if you exceeded the expectations, you were rewarded for it. Now, if it took you till midnight, cool. If it took you till 4 in the afternoon, cool. Did you achieve it? So, we have an interesting model here.
Yeah, so you see, leadership is a challenge in either one of those situations.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, I think it's the same in a way. Even though we just mentioned government, corporate have maybe different incentives, I notice that people who are the best leaders for the long term in life are the people who check their ego at the door. I believe that.
Okay.
They put other people first, right?
Okay.
But you can imagine, you can think about it. For your listeners, I'm sure they can think about a leader in their life. It could have been their first grade teacher. It could have been their coach. It could have been their parents, right? It could have been their mom or dad. It could be grandmother, anybody in life. Somebody at work, somebody who inspired them. They can think of somebody like that. I bet just about everybody has one person that comes to mind when I say, who was somebody who was a great leader for you? They probably have somebody in mind. And they could think about what did that person said or what did that person do that inspired and motivated them that made them feel great, right? Made them want to give their very best, no matter what situation they were in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also think, okay, so you have somebody, most people do, that somebody was inspirational to them. Imagine if some of your listeners are in a leadership role now. And they go back and let's say, imagine they're 80 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're 80 years old, and there's going to be a birthday party for them. And all the people that they led are going to be in the same room, and they're going to give a toast to that person, to you, the leader. What would you want them to say about you, right?
Mm.
And thinking about what you'd want them to say about you as a leader,
mm-hmm.
Well, are you doing the things now that would make them say those things then? So it's ultimately about somebody inspired you, somebody motivated you to bring out your very best. They saw what was great in you, and now you're in a position to bring out the best in others, and hopefully you're doing that so they would raise that toast to you and say how inspirational, motivational you were to them.
Wow. That's kind of a pause, a pregnant pause for anybody listening. What would somebody's say about you as a person and then as a leader? And what did you do to sustain that evaluation of yourself? And are you still? Wow. Okay. That's homework for everybody.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I remember when I was with IBM, we always did, we did strategic planning, but we did succession planning for the leadership org chart. Okay, who is going to be in that chair in 5 years? And in corporations, rarely at the top are people there that long, unless it's the very top.
Right.
And the questions related to that had to be, what did they achieve? How did they achieve it? And what I liked about IBM when I was there, they looked at the person. There were awards for positive attitudes during stressful times, if you can believe that. I even got one.
Wow,
I just,
that's wonderful. It makes a difference.
It did. I mean, we were having a difficult time making quota. It was awful. And people, that's your livelihood, that's your mortgage, and people were depressed. And just a few things. How do you look at someone that is down and empathize with where they are and do one small thing to let them know it's okay? and that moment Absolutely. Will change. What do you do? What do you say?
I think to me, there are a lot of times, well, sometimes it's things you say, and sometimes it's just really listening to somebody, what they're going through, right?
Good point. Yes.
And I think, Tyra, that these people that listen to us, or even if we don't know them, who influence us, that we see as a leader in some regard, are, you know, they're like heroes in our lives. They make us want to strive to be maybe more like them in the things that they are doing. And so the leadership can take many different forms, and it can be practiced in many different ways.
And just based on what you said, I'm thinking you can be a leader and not know it.
Absolutely. A lot of times people are they never hear that they are, or they're more of a quiet leader and people are just watching them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, talking about heroes, who are some of your heroes and sheroes along your journey of life?
Yeah, I'll mention the heroes and sheroes, but no zeros. Who are the zeros that were in your life?
No, I'm not doing that.
I'm just teasing. It just came to my mind funny. I thought it was funny. All right, so a couple of them I thought about, you know, John Lennon was a hero for me because of his authenticity. I mean, he was one of the most famous people on the earth, and yet he decided to go his own way, regardless of what society thought about him. He lost a lot of fans standing up against the war in Vietnam, but he was authentic. He stood up for what he believed in. So anybody like that, as long as it's for something good, they're a hero to me. I would have to say Tim Tebow, who was you may have heard of him.
He was
a quarterback. He has a night every year where he has people who are challenged.
Yes.
To go to a prom all around the world. He's a hero to me because he's kind. His kindness is a hero to me. My father-in-law, I have to say his name, General Senecio Jarama, was a four-star general in Peru. He was the head of the Peruvian army. Hmm. And yet he started out very poor, impoverished. He grew up in the near the jungle in Peru, and yet he became a four-star general. So, I mean, his resiliency, his tenacity, for me, was very heroic. And then, of course, the people that we all know, you know, Martin Luther King, I mean, inspirational to everyone across all socioeconomic groups, across all races, who resonates with us even today. As a matter of fact, my wife is from Peru, and she read his speech, not having any context of our society, and just reading his speech, she started crying. Not even seeing his incredible speech, she read it and started crying. So someone like Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, life of selfless service, right? Nelson Mandela, I mean, look at what could have happened, all the bloodshed that could have happened in South Africa, but through his leadership, he prevented that. Incredible. Princess Diana, who had no formal power at all, but was able to rid a lot of countries from landmines and save a lot of lives just through her influence, even though she was no longer part of the royal family. And then all those, every time I see a sporting event, a football or basketball, and you see one of the athletes doing something really well, he gets an award, and often he thinks his mother or grandmother.
Oh, yes,
right?
Yes. And how many fathers feel left out at those moments?
I'm sure. But you all hear them say, she worked two jobs to get me to school and all that. Those are heroes, so they don't have to be famous people. So those are some of my heroes.
I like them. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I agree. If we had a list, I, you know, of course, I have a very personal hero, and that was my father, and actually my mom as well, because they told me, they helped me to feel loved in a way that even after they were gone, I had what they left over in me as strength to overcome some horrific experiences. So they're right up there.
That is leadership.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you were talking about, I lost my thought, which is terrible. I did. That's awful. That's an aging
thing. About your dear parents, I'm sure. That's a beautiful thing.
I was, and I do always. What I want to ask you, I'm going to give you a blank check. okay? And I'm going to ask you, if you knew whatever you chose to do with that check, if you knew you could not fail, what would you do?
I'd make sure everybody in the whole world knew there was a loving God who created them for a purpose, has given them talents so they can make the world a better place, and wants a relationship with them.
Mm. Okay. All right. I wish I had the check.
That's what I wish.
I wish I had the check. Well, let me ask you this. What have been some of the major challenges? These people you're training, having worn that hat on occasion, that's not an easy place all the time. What have been some of your wins and some of your challenges in the whole experience as a leadership trainer?
Right. The challenges that I've had overall have been when people work for an organization that does not support the ideas we talk about in leadership. When they are not recognized or rewarded for establishing the vision, mission, et cetera, or they're not recognized and rewarded for showing empathy and compassion for the people they lead. It's a challenge when there's a disconnect between what we're saying in class and what's being supported in the organizational culture. So that's a challenge, that disconnect. So when that happens, the majority of people, I think many people anyway, check out psychologically because they think it's disingenuous that the organization is having training that is not in alignment with what the organizational culture really is. So I think that is a challenge. The other challenge is when people go through leadership training and then their own supervisors do not prevent an example of the very things we talk about in class, or do not support what is being taught in class. So they don't even have a conversation with them about what they learned or how they're applying it or how they may be rated based on using some of those things they've learned. So that's a challenge, a big challenge. People come into the classes with a lot of mixed emotions about a lot of things. So I think that's a challenge. I think those are the sum of the challenges. Now, the wins, I have to think.
Now, before you go on the wins, I really I want to pick up on something, several things actually. But when you're talking about the challenges when you're training people, sitting there, thinking, this is just something to do because it's not going to be applicable once we leave this room, something like that. Or, I guess what I'm saying is people feel powerless to be game changers or to be different in a structure that exists. They don't believe what you're doing with them and for them is going to have impact. Am I putting words in your mouth or what?
You're absolutely right. This is what many of their experiences have been. That is a challenge. So for me, a win is when I get them to think differently.
Okay.
Even in the situation you're in, you're still in charge, I'm still in charge, of our attitudes and to focus on what we can do something about rather than focus our energy on what we don't seem to do anything about, and that we will have more influence if we focus on what we can do something about. And so if I can get people to have a paradigm shift and think differently about really having some more control over their own life, then it's a win to me.
Mm. I wish we could bottle some of this stuff and people took it like supplements you take every day, you know, that you could just down a pill and know that you're worthy, that you have something to contribute in whatever situation you're in and that you're blessed and, you know. But short of that, which we don't have, what do we do? How do we inspire people who aren't leaders?
Yeah, I think that every single day, Tara, we impact each other, even in small ways. It doesn't have to be something big. It could be just saying hello to somebody who we're walking in the hall next to. Rather than ignore them, we say hi. Or somebody in your neighborhood, hi, how are you? Or somebody in your family, you know, what can I do for you? I think there's an expression, we either take people up to the balcony, which is a great place to be, or we drag them to the basement. there's all these little moments in life with people that we know and or strangers where we are impacting their life. And then they take whatever we've given them and they pass it on to other people, good or bad. We are really influencing so many people in our lives every single day by how we treat them. And so I think we can be a leader by leading people up to the balcony, you know, in a positive way, even in small things. That much we have control over.
So I'm back to my audience going, so Tyra, the dots. I think we've connected the dots. I think we've talked about how important it is to be clear about what you're trying to do in your family, in your organization, be it religious or secular. I think when we're talking about leadership, we're talking about humanity. And I think you've talked about different kinds of leaders and the different purposes that leaders are needed. And if we can communicate clearly what the organization, what the family's trying to do, why are we here? What are we doing? How do we know when we did it? How well we did it? If we keep those, and I want to put this in, that people in the organization, be they a leader or not, understand that they have worthiness, and the leaders leading them make sure that they feel appreciated and help them through that to appreciate themselves.
Absolutely. To help them grow and develop, to listen to their ideas and dreams, to validate their feelings and concerns, to be open to their perspectives and even different ways of doing things, to be inclusive like that. Okay. And to do that all with empathy and compassion so they are, as you said, valued and appreciated.
Awesome sauce. Okay, you got 1 minute to tell me about your successes. Just one minute.
My successes?
Uh-huh.
Okay, my successes. Well, I may never see my successes as far as anything I've ever said or done that may have impacted somebody in a positive way. I may not see all of them. But I have to say, for me, my biggest success is being a father to my 13-year-old daughter. Because I believe that God has put her in my care to help raise her, become the best human being possible. And even though I'm an imperfect person, I feel like when I see her doing well, when I see her feeling good about herself, when I see her taking leadership roles in her life, and I see her having a good character, then for me, Tyra, that is my greatest success.
Well, I want my audience to know that Mr. J. Little just connected the dots for you. He just talked about success in terms of clearly transmitting, sustaining, and maintaining a relationship with a daughter that makes her know how valued she is, which will allow her and him and them to sustain not only their family today, but forever. See how easy that was?
And maybe she'll grow up to be a great leader.
Oh, no maybe about that.
She will.
There you go.
I love it.
Okay, Mr. J, it's time for you to do your assignment, your letter to yourself.
Okay. You know, Tara, I thought about this, and I thought about I could list, 10, 20 things I could do differently in life when I look back at my younger self, and I thought of all these little practical things. But really,
I'm listening for the letter.
Here's the letter. Dear Jay, I'm so excited for you. You are going on a great adventure. It's called life. And it will be filled with many exciting experiences. You will meet incredible people, go to some amazing places, and experience profound moments of mystery and awe. And along the way, there will be many ups and downs. So here's the best advice I can give you. Life is not a problem to be solved, but an adventure to be enjoyed. I'll say it again because I want you to know this, Jay. Life is not a problem to be solved. It's an adventure to be enjoyed, a gift to you from your loving Creator. So, in the happy moments, praise God. In the difficult moments, seek God. And in every moment, thank God. John 3:16. And remember, no matter what life looks like or how you feel in the moment, God is in control. Love, Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Jay Little. I like to leave a little soul food on the Frankly Speaking table each week to remind you, my dear listeners, that during those moments when you're tired of being tired, where the children are walking on your last nerve, or where relationships are tilting in the wrong way, that you're not alone. And here's another little bit of wisdom from Glenna Doyle Melton, also through the Spirit of God. Stop. Stop holding your breath. Breathe. There's enough. I've created an abundance of acceptance, attention, recognition, joy, peace, money, energy, food, clothes. I will never leave you without enough. And there's nothing to be afraid of. No feeling, no circumstance, no person. These things come and they go. And you can live through them without running, hiding, numbling, or hurting any one of my children. And did you know this, my angel? There's nothing wrong with you. Not one day in your life, you are exactly who you're meant to be, right now as you are. Your seat at the table is guaranteed. I look forward to next time. Again, remember you're worthy. You're stronger than you feel, smarter than you think, more beautiful than you know, and more loved than you can ever imagine. You are chosen. You are important. Treat yourself like someone you love. This is Tyra G. You've been listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia. Until next time. Living intentionally and loving you.